Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
Hello, Devin.
Hello.
Devin, what do you got for us today, this evening?
Tonight.
Yes.
A carpenter's credo. All right.
All right.
When we build, let us think that we build forever. Let it not be for present delight, nor for present use alone. Let it be such work as our descendants will thank us for, and let us think, as we lay stone to stone, that a time is to come when those stones will be held sacred because our hands have touched them, and that men will say, as they look upon the labor and wrought substance of them, see, this is our Father did for us. Oh, see, this our Father did for us. I messed the end up. But it's in quotes, this our Father did for us.
All right.
I saw that on Instagram. I think that some people liked it. John Ruskin. Do you know who that is? Maybe.
John Ruskin. It sounds like an artist.
I mean, it's supposed to be a carpenter's credo, so maybe he's just a great woodworker.
Ruskin. I'm thinking of a painter from like the 1800s or whatever, or is a Ruskin, but I don't think it's John Ruskin.
Is there any other art form like furniture making or carpentry so unknown to the masses, you know, making furniture and I would say making, but now that's become a popular thing. But the greatest minds and the greatest versions of this thing are unknown to, you know, 99.9.
Yeah.
Like, I personally couldn't name really anyone. I mean, there's some people. Obviously, if you're into woodworking stuff, you'll know the guys.
Right, yeah.
But the general public knows nothing of them. But anyway, so that was just a good quote. It's a lot of pressure. Think when when we build, let us think about we are building it forever, right?
Yeah.
But it's true. I do think of that sometimes when you're making something,
right?
Or even my videos, our videos, but me putting the videos together, not as much. I like to think of them in the future as a timestamp. I go, oh, someday someone will be able to look back on this. Like we're working on the toy box for my daughter and. She'll be able to go back and watch it and say, oh, there's Uncle Dustin making this toy box and, you know,
right.
Be sitting in her college dorm with it or something. And she'll be sitting on it I don't know what, maybe she won't have books in it, but you know, all her digital devices,
right. Maybe art supplies or something or you know, blankets or something. Who knows? Yeah. So I have a couple thoughts. So one is, kind of just goes back to the idea of, you know, creating something that's lasting. And how do you make something in a way that's going to potentially last for a long time, right? Be a viable piece of whatever it is you're making for generations to come.
Right.
And I think there's a level of kind of, I guess, craftsmanship or complexity that comes into creating something that is, you know, something that is, like, it has the potential to wear away over time. So you know it's going, you're building in a way that's going to last, but it's made out of materials that then potentially could just, you know, wear away or rust or rot,
right,
or, you know, eventually lose their stability, you know? So like glues and woods and metals and things like that when we're building, you know, but that's like potentially generations, right?
Crafty style stuff. Like
right.
If you're knitting or something,
right,
a blanket is a great thing, but it won't probably be here 100 years from now.
Right. It's going to deteriorate. This like material we're using is going to deteriorate. Now, if you have something like an axe head or, you know, things that are steel, right, they're going to preserve a little longer. And obviously the more you kind of, if you take care of them over the generations, right, it could last potentially forever. But
right,
you're still creating something that you hope has the like integrity to hold up for a certain amount of time. So that's my first thought on this idea, right? That you're creating something that is timeless potentially, right?
Right.
And then that rolls over into my other thought about art. And when I'm creating art, with that mindset of how do I do a piece of art, and me specifically as like a landscape painter, how do I paint a landscape in a way that is timeless, right? Or that it has hints of its time, but isn't like fashionable, right? Because we know that fashion and fads go a short amount of time, right? They're like,
right,
this is what's trendy now. And how do you kind of circumnavigate that trendiness and get to the part of that artwork that has substance to it that will last over time, and whether
right,
that's like the material you're using or it's you know, a compositional idea that you're building, a composition you're building what's inside your image based off of a certain thing, or if that's a theme, right? Because something like landscape painting is something that is a little bit more timeless. It's been around for quite a long time in different forms, you know, but like,
so
that's the kind of same idea. Is like, how do I do something that is potentially timeless, but also does relate back to the time that I'm doing it in?
Right.
Kind of a fun question.
Because when your grandchildren do look at it, them spotting probably the time period that you did it in is an
right,
interesting part to to what they're looking at, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Like, oh, this is what they were using at the time. This is what I can see. This is how either the landscape changed or the subject has changed.
Right.
Yeah,
I think that's fun. I think that is, it's definitely something that I've thought about in art and in craft. You know, like when I'm coming up with, you know, knife designs and things like that, all the designs, all of the knives that I've made have come from my own head, and obviously my own head is full of images and references of tons and tons of other knives that I've seen. So potentially as like, just as a knife maker, you know, I'm pulling all this like information from years of you know, looking at inspiration, looking at other knives and kind of picking and choosing what I like about things. And then that kind of makes up what my preference of a knife is.
Right.
And that also goes with like what I use it for, right? I like to make knives that are kind of camping and backpacking and bushcrafty, because that's what I do.
Mm.
You know, like I'm not, if I were living in the jungle, you know, I'd probably make more like parang type knives that were longer, like machete style, right? Because that's what I would use them for. If I was up in the Arctic, I might make more Ulu style knives, because that's what I'd be around. That's, you know, so being on the East Coast, you know, kind of make something for your area. But then also, same thing with a knife. Like, is the design a classic design? Is it something that's fashionable? You know, like I would say there's like a fashion right now for brute to forge knives, right? And that's a knife where you leave some of that forged texture on the blade. And I love the way they look, but that's definitely like something that's fashionable right now.
Right.
And, you know, again, for like a pretty good reason, because it looks awesome. But Is that something that you wanted to, you'd want to put on there? Is that something that's sustainable, right? If you like, if you leave pits in steel that can gather and contain, you know, bits of moisture and rust, right, then because they're there, because they have been, you know, either formed or you're pulling it from a piece of steel that already has that texture on it. Well, like, is that going to be sustainable? So I like the idea. I like that whole idea of balancing, you know, this kind of potentially sustainable over a long amount of time, you know, whether it's art or craft. What do you do? How much time and effort do you put into something to make sure it lasts for a long time and that it will, like, you know, go from generation to generation, or you do something in the moment, right? Because there's plenty of stuff that I just do in the moment. Like, I need to, you know, build the projector box. So we used glue and like a nail gun, you know, a pneumatic nail gun, and just put it together because it will work perfectly for what it's doing now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of those things, I guess, like, I guess technology specifically, because technology is moving so fast. It's hard to imagine like a bit of technology that would be like sustainable over a long amount of time.
Right.
You know, I mean, you have like the ideas of things, right? But the technology behind those ideas change, like projection, right? Mm-hmm. So you go from like shooting light through an actual negative on a film reel to project an image to fully digital projection that we have now.
Yeah. Know? I think, right, with everything, you get to a point. Well, not to a point. Okay. Let's say every endeavor has a perfection spot you're trying to get to. So a lot of technology is almost, perfection isn't a reachable goal in modern technology, right? Like the perfect projector necessarily. I guess there is a perfect goal, but it can always be clearer, brighter, cheaper. But certain things you can hit a perfect goal. Older crafts, maybe that's why people are so interested in it. There is an achievable goal. Like one of the people who liked that quote that I found on Instagram, it probably came up because of him, Justin Dietrich.
Right.
He's doing the whole timber framing stuff at Maker Camp. So there is kind of a perfection.
Right. Yeah.
Timber framing doesn't get better. I mean, it gets cleaner, right? You can maybe make it a little better, and there's the perfect examples of it, right? Maybe a great barn somewhere or something like that. But the end sight is there. You're not constantly chasing a new style of timber frame. It's been perfected.
Right, exactly.
So I think he would like that quote. Like, these things that will last for a long time. Yeah, a timber frame building will last.
Right.
And your grandchildren can see that and put their hands on it and say, and see actual, where your hands were and your cut marks were, and, you know.
Right. Yeah, I think that also brings up the whole idea of, like, how far do you push perfection before you lose the artist's hand in it?
Mm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, like, mm-hmm. how like, and if we go back to, like, timber framing, you know, if you cut all your joints perfectly, you know, everything is done perfectly, and all of the, like, all the milling is perfect, all of the, like, hewing is perfect, you feel good about it, but then have you lost the evidence of the person? You know,
right.
Same thing with knife making. If I go back to that again, you know, I could like make a knife perfect, you know, and I, that's my goal. Every time I'm making a knife, I want to make sure everything is symmetrical, you know, that all the scratches are gone, all the, like, everything that I can do is clean to the point where people will look at it and see, you know, the cleanliness of what I did at the hand. I guess that's the difference, right? That there's for single maker, for a maker of a single type of thing, and you buy that thing or whatever, someone, you know, buys something you have, they know that you made it. So then they can see the quality in the details.
Right.
So that does, you know, like, how far do you push something before you just relax a little bit and let some of those minor details, you know, minor flaws, possibly, you know, if you want to call it that, when do you leave those behind to leave the hand of the maker?
Yeah. It's like, I would say any great musician, you know, they start out young, or let's take classic rock, for example. You have all these great musicians who made this great music in the 60s and 70s, and there was it was raw, and there was live recordings, and they were trying stuff out, and they were on drugs and drunk, blah, blah, blah. So there's a feeling of the human in it, and you know that it's not, you know, there's no auto-tune or anything, and they would all play together in the same room.
Right, right.
And then you get, like, the same people, and their albums from the 80s and 90s are super clean, super perfect, because they have more money. They have all the money in the world, all the time in the world, and they have the best musicians in the world trying to play for them. Well, you know, like, let's say it's Eric Clapton. It's not just his buddies from other bands now. It's he's met the best bassist and drummer. So it sounds so clean that it's lost what we liked about it in the first place. It's still good because it's Eric Clapton, but if you listen to something from the 80s or 90s of Eric Clapton, it just sounds like this super sterile thing that just doesn't have what we want from his music.
Right. But I agree. I think also people who are appreciate a craft, and say if we go back, you know, sticking with music, you appreciate the craft because you understand what went into it. But I think those people also will appreciate a live show just as much. Right, you know, because you understand there's both things. And maybe the, like, produced record is there to gain new followers, right? And then the people who love that group anyway will have the live recording, but then they'll have, you know, like, they'll have the live recording from the shows. And they'll have the studio recordings from the, you know, from the album that they put out. And then maybe like, the cleanliness is what wins new, let's say, customers, right, or a new audience, and then the grit is what sustains people. You know, they're like, maybe they want that. Yeah. They want that reality. Maybe if, like,
I guess, now we're going into a different conversation about, like, music and what music's good for that style, and depending, you definitely want a clean recording, but that's why some bands, their best stuff is the studio album, and some bands, the best stuff is their live. It just depends on who you're talking about.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. You know, if you're into jam bands or something, you want the live albums. Of course, you want that.
That's where they're jamming. Right.
Right. If you're into some type of EDM or tech stuff or just anything maybe really sharp, rock, like heavy rock, like, or even something like Queen, you know, maybe you want the fully produced.
I guess you're right. Like, there is,
it depends on who you're.
Right. Of course. If there's a sound that you're looking for.
You want the Beastie Boys albums. You want the records.
Right.
You don't want Beastie Boys live. Not that it wouldn't be great, but you know, that's not what we're searching for.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And I think maybe that's also that, like, it's the craft. It's the thing you make for the layman, the person who's trying to draw in, who doesn't know about your craft, right? You make the clean thing. And then as people understand it, then they start to, like, look for the more raw thing. And I think that's evident in, like, every movie you see now has outtakes or has all behind the scenes. Like, if you get the DVD, you're going to get all that because you want to know about the character. You want to know about the actors who are behind the character and, like, what they did to make that movie. I think it's the same thing with, like, a show like Forged in Fire, right? Forged in Fire I think it's interesting to knife makers, but it's really for non-knife makers, right? Because it's, like, it's about getting more people to be interested in something that then push this awareness and more, like, information into the craft.
Maybe it's, in a way, like the Bob Ross of it, right?
Yeah, right.
Just this on the outside, very interesting from beginning to end in a condensed program.
Yep. Yeah,
I mean, obviously, people watch Forged in Fire, they don't necessarily think, oh, I can do that. But you're still amazed by the quick turnaround and transformation. And it brings people in, gets them interested in it. And then you can go deeper from there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that also can, you know, describe what we do on our channel. You know, it's like we're condensing everything down that I do in the shop to make something that might take us 10 hours, 20 hours, 30 hours into, right. you know, a half an hour or 45 minutes or less. You know, so it's, again, it's that kind of, it's a how-to, because you could follow along and I am giving you tips and tricks, but it's also really just like a check this out, you know, like look at this things that I've done. You know, this is how I do it, but we're, you know, you're not going to show everything. It's not like coming actually into the shop and being there the whole time.
Right.
And learning like hands-on and getting like instant feedback and, you know, don't hold it this way, you know, move your right hand over a little bit and you hold it this way and it'll work a little bit better. So it's like, it's just that kind of intro type thing that brings more people in, which is what, I mean, like, fortunately, unfortunately, however you see it, maybe, you know, with like TikTok and Instagram, you know, stories and reels and all that stuff, it's like the attention span is getting shorter and shorter, so you have to figure out how to like push this stuff down into smaller and smaller things that are going to hold people's attention if that's the type of audience that you want.
Right. You know, for me, I think and we know where our style is, and we know we like longer things, and I want to sit down and consume something in a big chunk, not a small. Like when I sit down and focus on something, I want to focus on it for a while. And I'm relatively new to Instagram, right? Like a year I've been using it, and I kind of watch people's stories, but I really don't like it. And not to mention the video stops and starts every, what is it, 10 seconds?
Yeah.
It's just like, quick. Oof.
Yeah.
So I don't want to sit there and keep watching it or like skipping through. And I mean, I'm not the audience, and obviously it works, because, and I don't mind that people do it. Like, I understand why you do it and why people have to do it. And it's kind of interesting, but as a thing, I don't like sitting down and watching it.
Yeah. I think it also could depend on how you're using, because a lot of people do put up like really quick, you know, stories or whatever that are just little snippets of things that are happening. But then, I love watching Jimmy DiResta's stories, because he's just kind of bringing you along with his day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's like, oh, what's he working on today? And he'll give us little snippets of it throughout the day. True. So then it's like that's like a magnifying down into you're almost a little bit more intimate with what's going on. So then when I see a video, I'm like, oh, this was all the stuff that I've been kind of following along over the last couple weeks. You know, I've seen these things happening. So it's that kind of, but it's, again, I think it depends on how you use it, you know.
So why do they still chop it up in such small bits? Why can't they just leave it to the size of, if they're going to let you do 30 10-second bits in a row, why can't you just connect them?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess you can do like is it a reel maybe that's longer? Mm-hmm. Or even it's just like I could record a live Instagram live without it actually being live and do a half an hour and then post it. But maybe, I don't know. I think it's that you're kind of following along throughout the day. It's almost like tagging along, right? Because I'll see, like, I'll watch a story by, like, let's say Justin Dietrich, right? I'll see something that he's doing, and then I'll watch his stories, and then an hour later, 2 hours later, I pop back into Instagram and I see that he's back up fresh again. He's got fresh content that's added on to what he already did. So then I could click on it and see what else he's done, you know? So it's like when you have the chance to check in, you can kind of check in and see where he is. Almost like if you're on like doing a 4-hour live stream, like we did for the 100,000 subscriber episode, you know, I think people were kind of checking in and checking out throughout that time. You're like, oh, what's up now? What are you working on now? You know, because it's something like you're just following along with what's happening in the shop. You know, I feel like that might also be similar to the way we approach Maker Camp. And I think a lot of people, right, are all these conferences where you're like, okay, I'm in this section, but I don't want to completely like just devote my time to one section. I want to go and see whatever's going over here and see what these guys are doing. And, you know, and then maybe I'll do some of this type of stuff and help out over here. But then I want to come over here and help out. And I want to like participate in this. So you got to kind of pop back in and, you know, kind of get a little bit of everything. So,
yeah.
But yeah,
I'm just getting old.
You're like, I just want to sit down to one movie.
Yeah, I want to sit down to a 40-minute video, have a beer, and watch it for 40 minutes.
Yeah, and I think also like something like that, you know, I know that sometimes, most of the time I'll watch all the way through. When there's something that I'm interested in, I'll watch all the way through. But I can't always. You know, I might watch part of it and then come back to it a little later, you know.
I think I just want things to watch at night when everybody's asleep.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I can just turn something on. It's like, oh, great, a 35-minute video, sweet, yeah. I'm set.
Right, exactly.
I'm not going to sit there and flick through 100 people's videos. And I've done it. I just get nothing out of it, personally.
Right.
I skip through so many things, or I fast forward through something. It's just, it's constant, like, I want exactly what I want. And if this doesn't hold my interest, like, I'm not giving it any chance to hold my interest.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if your first two little clip things, I'm, like, skipping. I'm, like, swiping past. Even if you're, like, discussing something and leading up to something cool.
Yeah.
I've already gone, no, I don't
skip, but... skip. Yeah, exactly. You're going to get through to something that I...
You know, and you could have told, like, a story in that chunk that I need to know about, but, you know, maybe that's too in-depth for Instagram, and maybe the point is, like you said, to just get a look in if you want.
Right.
On someone's daily life. If you're into that person,
right,
you know, see what they're doing today. They whip out their phone, they show their truck for the day and what they're working on, and then you're just done. So,
yeah, maybe I think
I'm using it wrong, or I just don't care enough. I don't know.
I mean, even like, you know, the people that I want to follow along, you know, I follow, let me see. I follow 545 people, you know, and as far as stories go, like I might watch 5 people's stories. So, like, there's another 540 people that potentially could be doing stories, but they come so fast that they just, like, they fill in and back up, you know? So, like, I'm not going to scroll through, like, 40, 50, 100 stories to see who else is out there because I'm just not going to. You know, like, they're so, they're made to be so immediate and check in that, like... I'm not going to spend 20 minutes checking on stories. I'm going to spend 2 minutes checking on stories and see what people are doing. You know, so
and
I don't know.
They also, I think it's in me, I'm a little hesitant because they found a way to shove more ads in, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, if you watch, you think you've watched 5 different things, so we're going to slide in an ad.
Yeah, right.
It's like, no, I didn't watch 5 things. I watched 5 3-second clips. And you're going to hit me with another BS ad. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Back to your quote. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you drinking will anything it last? Tonight?
Yeah. Oh, actually, I have a funny little thing about that. I'm drinking Flying Dog.
Okay. Nice. I'm drinking a Guinness Blonde, which I'm actually pouring on top of. I waited because I thought it would be fun to hear that little crick, the like opening of the beer. But pouring on top of some orange juice, a little beer mosa.
Ooh, yeah.
I love myself a beer mosa. Yeah. Just like, you know, in the bottom of a pint glass, maybe a 3/4 inch of orange juice on the bottom. And some beer
Guinness. Right, yeah, Guinness Blonde is the only Guinness made in the U.S.
Yep, that's right.
Right here in Balmer.
Yeah.
And then Flying Dog is in Frederick, right? In another Maryland area.
Yeah.
And anyway, so the Frederick beer, I got a mix pack. They have some, their art style on the cans is, do you know, what's the artist who did Fear and Loathing?
It's, I'll get it. Give me a second.
Okay, Fear and Loathing, if you guys have seen the poster.
Ralph
the movie,
Steadman.
Okay, yeah, it's that weird, like, paint splatter, but also weird creature, kind of streaky, wild-looking art. So he did, I don't know exactly, but they have the rights to it.
Yeah.
And so they have that kind of edgy artwork, but they also have, like, edgy names.
Yeah.
So I'm drinking, I'm drinking Raging Bitch is one of their big ones, right?
Yeah, nice.
So Raging Bitch... got banned, I think, from a state.
Really?
I think it was maybe one of the Carolinas, which is just good for them, right? That's so good. for their brand. It's just, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
We're that's so edgy and wild that, you know, this state banned us. I forget the exact story.
Surprised, like, not like Utah but, or something, you know. Like.
Right. So it's oh, they just won't let you drink there, you know.
Yeah, right, exactly.
But so it's they said it was obscene or whatever. So I think the mix pack is called Descent or Dissenting. Actually, hang on. Let me grab it real quick.
So I did like about Ralph Steadman. I actually looked it up because I was like, that's kind of crazy. Like that they continually have these illustrations by Ralph Steadman, who's a world famous, renowned illustrator. And, you know, like Devin said, they used him in Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. If you've seen that poster with like Johnny Depp's head and his neck being all stretched out and he's got the sunglasses on and the like convertible, that's like Ralph Steadman's look, is this kind of drippy, stretchy, kind of crazy illustration. And so, I think they reached out to Ralph Steadman to do one of the illustrations on one of their beers, and he was like, that's cool, like I'm totally into it. So he did it, and they've like kept going with it, you know. So he's just like, he's their like brand ambassador, and they just kind of keep reaching out to him, and he keeps doing it. And like you said, you know, there's like, they've got tons of different ones now. I think Raging Bitch is like, has a dog on it, you know, like an actual bitch, right, a female dog that's like sitting right, kind of crazy and looks all right, weird. And yeah, they're funny. And Corinne loves the flying dog beer, like, illustrations. Oh, yeah. Ever since she was little, she'd be like, oh, there's that flying dog. There's those cool illustrations. It's like, it's just something else, something fun.
See, that just tells you, reach out sometimes. You never know who you're going to get or who's going to be interested in what you're doing.
Right, so, yeah. So you have a mixed pack.
Oh, man, I hit the quote. Hang on, I'm right back.
Dang. All right, well. Looks like it's still me again. I actually got Flying Dog. I got a mix pack tonight, which was, I can't remember what it's called, but there are three beers. They have their one that's like, it's like called like Tropic Peel or something. And then they have a deck beer, which is kind of an easy drinking beer. And then something else. We were sailing this evening. It's a Wednesday evening right now. And I got the beer. We always get, you know, we kind of take turns buying beer for the boat. And so I bought the mixed pack of a Flying Dog with those three. Mm-hmm. Thunder Peel, deck beer, and then there's a third. I can't remember off the top of my head. But
you bought that tonight?
Yeah. But nice. But the deck beer was real, what did Drew call it? It's, what do you call it? Dank. Real dank. Like, it definitely tasted like marijuana. I was like, that's weird. Like, I took a sip, and I was like, this tastes like pot. And Sean's like, huh. I, like, gave Sean, he, like, took a sip. He's like, yeah, I can smell it. He's like, I've never smoked pot, but it smells like, you know, it tastes like what it smells. And then, sure enough, we give it to Drew, who our brother Drew, you know, he's a fan of the marijuana. And he, like, took a sip, and he was like, oh, yeah, this is definitely danky. Like, this tastes like marijuana. I don't know what it was. It's that kind of, like, I guess whatever that
deck. Yeah, I don't know the taste. There's a lot of things that are getting that flavor, that taste. I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah.
If it's not in its proper form, but right. Anyway. Okay, so I was looking. I had the thing. The variety pack says Disobedient Beer. Now I'm just assuming they're putting this out as like a little FU to whatever state it is, because right now the new look to the Raging Bitch can, it's all black and in big red words it just says Raging Bitch.
Oh, really?
So it's like they took away everything but the big words right in the middle, and it's great.
And that's, isn't that like, what's the type of beer? It says it's a it's like a Belgian style IPA or something, right? Like Raging Bitch is.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely an IPA. I don't know the exact.
That's a good
one. Oh, yeah, it's great. But yeah, and the quote on the side of it says, two inflammatory words, one wild drink. but I saw that. I was like, oh, that's probably why they're doing it. Like, they changed the can just to be a black can with big words on it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Like, if we're going to be inflammatory, let's be inflammatory.
Yeah, let's make it as big as.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I'm drinking. Nice. What have we been up to? I'll start. We're moving tomorrow. Yeah, we're right on. we're signing all the paperwork and closing on the house. So that'll be cool. And Dustin's obviously helping everyone move, and mm-hmm. we're all busting our butts moving everything around. I'm still surrounded by boxes. Actually, we got the box truck dust.
Oh, it's nice.
It's a 28 foot beast.
Whew.
And we pulled that up. I got it in here, and we actually took all the my wife and I took all the boxes out of the living room and loaded them up already. So that's about 40 boxes that you don't have to move. So,
all right, awesome.
You're welcome. So you just have to move all the heavy furniture. But
I can move heavy furniture.
So we did all that, and we're getting ready, and I have a sun porch attached to my apartment now, and it didn't really, I guess I did, but you don't realize how much stuff you put out on one of those outdoor porches.
Yeah, right.
Until you're trying to, like, clean it up and figure it out. So I've been out there for, like, 2 days. It's finally down, and, you know, many truckloads later, but that's what we've been doing.
Nice. That reminds me of, we were up at one Saturday up at our parents' house and helping them clear out their attic. And it was just like so much stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do you need like eight soft suitcases, soft sided suitcases up in the attic? Why do you need like 30 baskets of different sizes that are just living in the attic? They're not sentimental. It's like, it's not like it's sentimental. I mean, there are some things that there are lots of that are sentimental, but there's just like so much stuff.
Yeah. 10%.
Yeah, exactly. Right. 10% sentimental. The other like 90% is just, it's just things that I think what it is that you get to a point in your life where you kind of go over a hurdle in your life where something is important to you. And then from then on out, you kind of consider that importance or that immediate need that you needed at one point, like as a continual need, it's like maybe mom and dad needed, when we were kids, they needed luggage, like bags for us to go camping, when we're a family of six. Right. So then, that was important to them at that point. It was like, there was probably a time where we were short, what do? We got to go out and buy a new one. So then after that, when you see a good deal on something, you're like, oh, I needed that thing at this one time and it was really important. So let me get one because I'll probably need it again. Maybe that's it.
Yeah. I think it's a little bit of that, but it's a little bit of being a parent, like an older parent. Yeah. Cause parents always seem to have what you
need. Yeah. Right.
Hey, do you guys have any, like small, soft, something I could pack stuff with and try. Yeah. Oh no, we got three of them up in the attic.
Exactly.
We used them 10 years ago. we have, you can have them. At the time they're just trying to give them away, but it's like they have exactly. Cause they knew maybe someone will need this.
Right,
and you have the attic. So you just keep throwing stuff up there.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah. We basically filled up our parents' driveway with stuff out of the attic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, they said they had an estate sale, which we helped them kind of set up a little bit and get ready for that. And yeah, it's going to be wild. Like this last weekend that we just passed, and then this upcoming weekend, it's going to be a busy weekend. just know that there's a good sailboat race that I could be participating in on Saturday that I'm not because we got tons of stuff. Although on Saturday, so Saturday morning, I think I texted you when you were texting the brothers about like coming up on Saturday or coming mm-hmm. Saturday morning. I'm participating in a archery event at Baltimore Bowman, which is that bow club. At the top of Hartford. So this Saturday there's their they're called their Royal Archer event and something else. It's like the Royal Archers and something because it's like a SCA, which is Society of Creative Anachronisms, which is like people who kind of dress up, in old timey stuff and do fun old stuff.
Yeah.
It's our local chapter of the SCA who do archery. So there's an event
cool.
So they're going to be an archery event. And then there's a cooking thing where you do old timey cooking. And it's actually, I think in the past, it's a weekend long, like a Friday night, Saturday night type thing, you know, into Sunday. Mm-hmm. But it's really like focused Sunday and Saturday. So we've signed up for that a couple weeks ago. And we went and did that. I think we were talking about this last week, the bow class that we did, shooting some stuff. So this weekend is that event. And so it starts early, I think like 8:30 or 9 on Saturday morning, which is when we'll be there. And I'm not like competing in the actual archery event, but they're doing a bunch of archery stuff throughout the day. Like they're going to do a bunch of 3D, you know, targets and a bunch of like fun things like gremlins and, you know, dragons and just doing a bunch of fun stuff. So
you'll show up right when the pizza comes and we have most of the stuff unloaded at the other house. Hey guys, you may move some bat boxes or...
I'll do my best to be there.
Hey, if you want if you want to dress up and role play an ancient unloading of goods, we could do that too. Get your kilt on. What is this wagon you brought hither?
They even said they were like, if you come and you don't have stuff to wear to participate, you have to be wearing some type of costume, and then so they have lots of stuff for people to just like put on when we get there. But I feel like, you know, if I don't come in something that I like, I'm gonna be wearing like hose and like a tea tunic and like a beret.
are you gonna look like
I'm gonna be carrying a lute.
What's his name? A lute. Are you gonna look like Peter Pan?
Yeah, right. Exactly, with like the pointed cap.
Yeah, the feather.
Some like shoes with bells on it. So, I don't know what I'll do. I don't know if I'm gonna like wear something or just kind of grab whatever the thing they have, but it's a little silly, but it's also just fun. Like I think we're gonna have a great time, and you know we all really enjoy the kind of the imagination that goes into that type of thing. So, you know, and this kind of like, I mean, I think just archery in general is an archaic hunting form, and obviously there's a lot of people that still do it, because I think it's because of the like the kind of purity to it. You know, this like hinting back at some other time when there was like a pure hunting technique, you know, because obviously we have guns and we have all sorts of stuff and crossbows and things that, you know, and scopes that can make killing really immediate and also much easier. You know, so like if your idea is to like keep the animal as pure as possible and not prolong their pain and whatever, if you're going to hunt. Well, then put a scope on a rifle and shoot the animal through the heart, you know, like
that's
going to be as close as and as painless as possible. Yeah, but sometimes some type of
sometimes people poo-poo, you know, using a high-powered rifle.
Right.
And yes, it's easier, but you know, a majority of the time you're going to get a quicker kill with a better aimed, I mean, if you use an AR with a hollow scope, I mean, you're going to be able to pop it right wherever you want to, you know?
Exactly. The animal's not going to flinch. They're not going to like maybe it's gonna, get struck weird and, you know, like run off. Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. So if, like for the pure humanity of like, you know, hunting for a responsible thing, like, you know, feeding your family, well then the best like, thing to do obviously is to do it as quick and painless as possible for the animal.
Right.
So I think, you know, just the idea of these kind of archaic forms of hunting and thing, yeah, bushcrafting and camping and all this type of stuff. It's all stuff that we don't really need to do.
Yeah.
But it has, there's some type of like primal, like testosterone driven. I mean, it's also other women like it too, but there's something like pure about like knowing that you have the ability to do this type of thing that is something that your ancestors would have done before there was the modern technology of what we have these days, you know. And if, you know, God forbid the apocalyptic event happens, we'll be ready to go.
And there will still be bands of people on either sides, like using sticks and knives and arrows, but one group will still wear a mask and one won't. And that's they'll just throw down because of that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Stupid stuff. One group will be like, "I'm only using pure ancient technology because the gods have shunned all this new technology." And the, you know, the new people will be like, "I'm going to use springs and machinery."
And many layers of mask.
Yeah, so okay. we're doing that on Saturday.
Nice.
And what I've been working on this week, I've been working on the little Kiradashi marking knife, the file knife that I'll be giving away at Maker Camp. So that's been really good. I've spent 3 days working on it. A couple hours here and there. I made some good progress last weekend on it. I kind of like got the file, cut it down, shaped it down. You know, did everything on it that I needed to do. And then the next day, I think I put a bevel on it, got it ready to go. So it's close to kind of reaching the point in it where it's just kind of finished work. And then I actually just stopped today at Tandy Leather Factory to pick up a stud connector, like a John Brown connector, which is kind of like, if you imagine a doorknob, but that type of shape is what you like use to latch. So I'll be doing I have some material, what's it called? Shock cord. So like kind of bungee type cord that I'll put through the lanyard hole, and I'll use that to kind of latch over this little John Brown connector, stud connector.
I thought you were going to say you had to pick up more leather for your marking knife sheath.
No, I've got plenty of leather.
Got to pick up a squirrel hide, get this thing done.
I took my bow out and...
yeah. No, it looks so great. It's really cool. There's something really nice about that. Kind of the marking knives that you did for us, and that with just one edge instead of the point, but leaving a majority of the file.
Right.
You get the text on the bottom, and all the lines of the file, and it's really nice. It's a really cool. It's a great project that a lot of people could do.
Yeah, and I'm like, there's a secret step that I'm not gonna show on Instagram, so. If you want to know the secret step, and maybe I'll take a picture of it later and post it after Maker Camp, but we'll see. But
a
hint is it's something that I've done in the past, but I'm not gonna show what it is.
A secret step to making it or to completing it, like
a secret feature that it will have that show.
The final product, though, you'll know what it is if you
The final product. If I get pictures of the final product, I won't post them until after Maker Camp.
I mean, we can do it on the video, you know?
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, okay. So I'll be doing there's something that I'm doing that's interesting and special to this marking knife that I'm not going to show in Instagram the main reason is because I want it to be a bit of a surprise for the person who gets it at MakerCamp. Right, so like I like the idea of people following along and doing the hashtag, the Maker Camp Maker Swap hashtag, which unfortunately there haven't been a lot of people posting to that. There have been a few people, but I'm hoping that there are more people that are doing it. You know, it'd be kind of fun to see what people are doing, but I also kind of like the idea that it's a little bit of a mystery of what you'll receive, because if you know the ideas that you put into the Maker Swap, and then I think on Sunday or something like Sunday afternoon I'm assuming they'll just kind of have everything gathered together, and then they'll do like pull names out of a hat and give out, you know, to somebody. You know, it's just like you get the name of somebody and that's what you get.
Right. As long as it's not like Secret Santa.
Right, exactly.
Or what's the I don't know
the
if
white
it was
elephant
like,
or something.
Yeah, what was the quote? It's like an office quote or maybe it's a quote, and I don't think they said it exactly this way, but it's Secret Santa, aka Shitty Christmas.
The way that they talked about it was basically like everyone puts in and then they just draw a name and you'll get someone else's thing. It's not like you get something and then you can either keep it or exchange it for something else. That would be fucked up, you know, like this is like cool, but I think I'm gonna exchange it for something else. Be like, all right, f you, so like there, you know,
yeah. All that is like two people who have the cool things, they're happy, everyone else is upset. Because not only do the people not get the cool things, everyone else who bought stuff are disappointed because no one wants their thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So when they were there were two guys that were introducing it, and I'll actually wait. I'll do I have another recommendation, but I'll do them as my recommendation. But they were talking about it. It was kind of their idea to people who are going to be at the at Maker Camp. And they came up with the idea of the Maker Swap, and I thought it was a great idea. But when they were introducing it, they did a little video on Instagram. They talked like when they were saying, like, if you're going to do this, do something that shows off what you can do. You know, like, it's got to be something that you're proud of, right? That you're like, this is a cool thing that you do, right? It's not just like something easy or something quick. You know, this is like something that you should put some time and effort into because you want to get something that someone else has put time and effort into. So that's my idea too. Is like, I don't want to give it all away because I want that person who gets it to be a little surprised, but I also want to kind of, you know, I want to show what I'm doing and I also want to put some time and effort into it and feel like have a sense of pride in the thing that I've done, that it's like either to the best of my ability or it's to the best of like, you know, what I could do and the amount of time that I had allotted to me to make something that I'm proud to give away to someone else, you know, and then I would feel justified by getting someone else's really cool thing because I know that I put in a really cool thing, you know? So it's like, you want to do enough that way when you get something back that is done really well, you don't feel guilty that you didn't put in the time and effort and, you know, the passion or whatever it is. So like it could, right. You know, maybe in total, the knife is going to take me, let's say, 8 hours to make, right? And I might get something that someone spent like 50 hours on, but this thing that I'm making is something that I'm proud of, you know, and those 8 hours for the knife and maybe another 3 hours or so for a sheath and kind of coming up with the design and coming up with something that I think someone else will really like. It's that effort and that pride put into it. So that's half of the reason why I don't want to show it. And I think also it's kind of fun just to like have something that's special to that person and that they get to see it before the rest of the world sees it, unless they're a maker camp. So,
all right.
So if you want to have a chance to win the marking knife that I'm making, the Kiridashi, which is the kind of the Japanese version of the marking knife, you got to come to maker camp and you got to put something into the maker swap.
Boom.
Yeah. So I've been doing that and then just getting ready to help you guys move this weekend. And, you know, our dog Luna, I think I may mention this. She got, spayed last weekend. Maybe I just didn't mention it.
Mm-mm.
But we've been, you know, trying to balance living our lives and also keeping her from playing with Toby, which is just the biggest hassle because they, you know, Luna is a little beagle hound dog and Toby is a Great Pyrenees. He's a big, you know, big white fluffy dog and they just love to play together. And it's so tough to keep them from playing because you gotta keep Luna, like her stitches and stuff from getting spayed is like, it's like, don't jump, don't play, stay calm.
Right. Oh,
it's like, man, how do you do that with like two puppies? You know, Toby's one and Luna's like 8 months, you know, it's like, but so we're like, we're keeping them calm and letting them play a little bit, kind of a little bit more and more each day, but just kind of trying to keep them calm. But Nicole and I are both like, well, we hope this doesn't, you know, permanently affect their desire to play. If we're like a week straight, we're like, you can't play, no playing, just chill out, everyone calm down. And they've been doing okay with it, but it's tricky. But we've been doing a lot of that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. We got the puppy too. Which,
yeah,
he's not chopped yet, but
right,
that'll come. Okay, so Dust, you gave me art, or you gave me trivia last week, and I got some art trivia for you this week.
All right. I like it.
Hang on. Oh, one sec. Let me mute. Oh, man. Hang on. My mic's falling down. One sec.
That's okay. It's nice. Nice pause in the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. How's everybody doing out there? So good to know people are listening. It's so awesome. You know, people will like shout us out, put stuff on Instagram. That's awesome. That's all we're hoping for. You know, we love everyone who's listening, but we also just love to, you know people are listening and, you know, we do the same thing. Like, I love shouting out other podcasts and things and hope you guys are enjoying what we're putting out here.
And now we'll do art trivia because Dustin did movie trivia for me last week.
All right.
So I think I'll probably do 10, but I might do a few more.
Okay.
There's a art history section and then there's a hard art section.
Hard.
Trivia. Hard.
Hard. All right.
Now I'm going to say some probably artist names that I get wrong, and you can correct me.
All right.
Okay, number one is, name the extravagant period of art and architecture prevalent in Europe during most of the 17th century.
Rococo.
No. Take another guess. 17th
century. So you said, describe it one more time.
Well, I guess, is that the second? What's the first part of that?
Baroque.
Yes.
Okay, so it's Baroque. All right.
Baroque, Rococo.
Baroque, Rococo. So in my mind, Baroque is like dark, moody, like lots of high contrast. I'm thinking of painting. And then Rococo is like gold inlay and flashy and like lots of pinks and lots of like frothy. So in my mind, when you were saying like, you know, kind of that type of stuff, I was thinking Rococo, but
yeah,
it is Baroque first and then Rococo comes after.
You know, let me write this down. I will give you half a point for that because you.
All right. Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, I'm thinking in terms of painting because that's what I do. So that's
completely
different periods, but they butt up against each other, Baroque and then Rococo.
Which famous painter was also a sculptor, an architect, and an engineer?
Leonardo, I guess it could be.
Yeah, that's one of the big ones.
Yep.
That's good.
He was all of those things.
The artist,
a Renaissance man.
Stop! You're not getting extra points for adding other stuff, all right?
And one interesting fact about him was
his mother's name was Sue. The artist Kandinsky is considered the first for this type of art.
Kandinsky. This type of
I'll say this is very a very simple answer. Don't go too in depth with what it is.
Kandinsky would be, I'm trying to think. I can see Kandinsky's work. I'm thinking like I'm trying to think of the term. I will preface my answers by saying that. We did our last sailboat race of the season this evening, and then I went to the after party and had like five or six beers, and I came home and I'm drinking another beer. So if I'm a little slow in the uptake, it might be the beers talking.
Come on.
So
trivia is done in pubs. Don't you know that? It's perfect. It sharpens the brain.
Exactly. Kandinsky would be. It's like the same thing that Degas did.
I'll say it's like a very simple answer. Very broad, simple answer.
Modern art.
No, but not a bad guess. No. Abstract.
Really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't put Kandinsky at abstract, but okay.
That's yeah.
That's why I was thinking more modern, like as I know. Opposed to like, but yeah,
it's okay. And it's such a broad answer that yeah, it's
abstract.
Almost
abstract, and it's I mean because, yeah, okay, that's fine. No, I don't think Kandinsky's abstract, but he is. He was doing kind of these funky shapes and like these like kind of amoeba type things and amorphous shapes and kind of creating images out of these things that are not necessarily realistic. So I guess that
well. Is. According to icebreakersideas.com, he was, okay? So
he was one of the proponents of abstract work. Okay.
Now here we go. This one digs a little here. Which of Picasso's famous paintings was inspired by the bombings of civilians during the Spanish War?
It would be called Ooh. Guernica.
Guernica. Very Guernica. Good.
Yeah, and Guernica is the name of the town in Spain that the bombs were in, one of the towns.
Well done.
Thank you.
that one's too easy, I would think. Well, I'll ask it. The American Gothic is one of the most recognizable paintings in the world. Who painted it?
American Gothic is painted by not Alfred. What is it? American Gothic. Yeah, it's the farmer with the pitchfork and his wife next to him.
Right, yeah, right,
and it's
right.
Painted by, I can't remember.
Last name is Wood?
Grant Wood.
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. That's I like that you gave me the last name of the first name because a lot of artists are known by their last names.
Yeah.
So it's like pulling the first name is a little bit harder. But yeah. Yeah, no, I was just like blanking on it. I was like, you know. The thing about Grant Wood though is like he's like a one hit wonder.
Mm-hmm.
I mean he's not, you know, it's the same way that like bands that are one-hit wonders. For their fans, they're not one-hit wonders, but, you know. But, yeah, that was his, like, claim to fame.
Yeah. Where did Vincent van Gogh paint the famous Starry Night?
Starry Night. It's not over Paris. Where is Starry Night painted? So, like, the city that it's painted, I guess where he painted it.
It's a type, it's a room and a province.
A room?
It's a place, like, and then the province where that place is at.
I don't know.
From the window of his asylum room.
Okay, I was going to say, I knew that he was in the same asylum. Okay.
Something.
I didn't know that, actually. I didn't know that he painted Starry Night from when he was at the asylum. Well, I know that he was at an asylum because he kind of went mad, and, you know, there's the whole idea that he, like, cut his ear off and sent it to his girlfriend, who was, you know, or who he thought who was his girlfriend, you know.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of fun stuff. Van Gogh. He was a prolific painter and did a ton of painting when he was in the asylum, but I didn't know that he painted Starry Night. That's cool.
Okay. I think I give you, I've lost track of the score, but you're doing pretty good. You've only really missed one outright, I think. Oh, and that one kind of, but.
Okay. Yeah, I wouldn't have. I mean, like I said, I didn't know that he painted that from the asylum.
Right. To try and prove that Michelangelo couldn't paint, this was the artist that suggested to the Pope that he should paint the Sistine Chapel. Oof. That's a tough one.
Okay. So it was another artist, a contemporary, who painted with Michelangelo and suggested that the Pope use Michelangelo as a painter.
Boy, did he eat his words, huh? Oh, boy. He said, man, this is looking really good. How much did you pay him for this?
Yeah,
that's pretty good. Crap. That's not bad. Look at him just laying up there doing, man, wow. Maybe he was just afraid of heights and didn't want to paint the thing.
Michelangelo.
So get Mike to do
time,
it.
He was painting. Get Mike. He's painting at the same time at Tintoretto. Was it Tintoretto? No, not Tintoretto.
Nope.
Let's see.
Who I will say he's got a long name.
Okay.
But it's AKA something simple. It's a single word name, AKA.
Okay. Michelangelo, Raphael.
You know, I'll give you the back end of his name, not the part.
Okay.
Sanzio da Urbino.
Urbino.
But there's a name in, yes.
Okay. Yeah, Raphael is from Urbino.
Okay. There you go.
That's kind of odd, though, because Raphael was, he was a painter, but I don't know, I always feel like Raphael is more of a sculptor. That'd be, I mean, but Michelangelo was a sculptor too. I mean, he did tons of amazing sculptures. So, yeah, cool. I like that.
Yeah, Raffaello.
I went to Urbino when I was in Italy. It's a really cool town that's like up on a hill, and it's got a wall all the way around it, and it's all these like really steep, like really narrow streets and stuff. And it was cool going to Urbino and knowing that Raphael was from there. So,
nice.
It's awesome.
This famous painting by Leonardo da Vinci was used for target practice by Napoleon's soldiers.
Was it the Last Supper?
Yes, it was.
All right, nice. Yeah,
I don't know if that's an old wives' tale, because there was also some things that they also used the Sphinx in Egypt as target practice and like shot his nose off, but that wasn't really how it happened.
And also, I mean, the Nazis like were on Hitler's like request, they were collecting artwork. Mm. And I mean, Da Vinci he wasn't a Jew, you know, so they weren't like, there was nothing against that. So they would have been collecting, not defacing, but The Last Supper is a fresco, right? So it's permanently on a wall. So
Napoleon, not.
Oh, Napoleon. Okay, sorry. Napoleon. Not okay. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. No, that's different. Sorry.
Yeah, I was French, thinking, not German.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It is, I guess Yeah, I guess if they're like Napoleon's going through and just, you know, destroying stuff that he doesn't care about.
Right. This is in French, Catherine David. Okay, here we go. Okay, this is supposed to be the last few ones I'm going to give you from the hard art trivia question area.
All right, I like it. All right.
What is unusual about Leonardo da Vinci's famous painting, the Mona Lisa? I don't know why I keep doing da Vinci's. I guess he's one of the big names.
The biggest thing that's unusual about it is that, like, the Mona Lisa's smiling, and at the time that wasn't really a thing that you would paint women doing.
So I would smile? I would think that. That's what I would think.
Okay. Well, then this is it. If it's not that, then it might be that that she's, like, recognizable.
No, it's a feature on her. Other than the smile. And that's kind of a subjective question. That you know, what's unusual about this painting? And anyone could say what's unusual. And usually you hear about the smile with a smirk.
Yeah.
This says she has no eyebrows.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it's kind of silly.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. It's funny. The Mona Lisa, no eyebrows.
There we go.
Oh, weird.
The famous painting, Birth of Venus, by Botticelli, features a goddess floating in the ocean on what?
On a clamshell.
Yeah, very good. Seashell?
Yeah.
But we will take clamshell.
The Birth of Venus. Yep.
Well, these are kind of silly, but... Oh, here we go. This one will really test you.
All right.
What year was Picasso born?
Picasso, I would say...
I'll give you, if you can get within 10 years of his birth, I'll give it to you.
Okay. I'll say 1875.
Is that your final answer?
Let's see. Okay, I know that, like, in the 40s and 50s he was around. Maybe it's a little bit later. Maybe it's like 1890, 1885. I'm gonna say 1880. Let's say that.
1880.
Sure.
Pablo Picasso was born 1881.
Oh, yes. Nice. That's awesome.
Good job. And your original guess was within 10 anyway. 10 years, you were 6 away.
Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah, there's some color photos of Picasso, and he's in his, like, 60s or 70s, you know. Mm-hmm. So I knew that, like, that would put him in the 1940s, 1950s. So
right.
Kind of making my guess on that. I mean, I knew he transitioned between the 18s and the 19s. So,
well done.
Thank you. 1881. All right, nice.
1 year off. That's a good. That's a good guess.
And I don't think I ever learned that. I think in art school or anything, I don't think I ever learned when he was born. But like right, I was purely going off of like the work that I knew he did and the photographs I've seen him in. You know, so yeah, it's like couldn't have been too early, but it also wasn't too late. So, all right, nice.
I'll give you two more.
Okay.
Which technique did Vincent van Gogh use to paint sunflowers?
Impressionism? Technique? I mean, it wasn't cubism. That was like Picasso, like, invented cubism with Braque, but they didn't. But sunflowers isn't really painted in cubism.
What's the Italian word for that?
For cubism?
For impressionism. For
impressionism. Plein air? That's not Italian. That's
like
French.
The word here is close to impressionism, but sounds Italian.
Okay. What is it? I don't know.
Impasto.
Impasto. Okay. Impasto. I mean, I've heard of that before, but, you know, it's not, I guess, like, that's why I was like, impressionism? Because he was a lot later than impressionism, but I was trying to think what that would be, because impressionists were people who basically, like, painted light and painted color to represent what they saw, and they were also painting from life, you know, the Impressionists were like the first artists that had paint in tubes, so they could actually go out in the landscape and paint, which is why they were doing it the way they were.
Right.
Yeah, that like instant gratification, because everybody else before that had to mix their own pigments, and you would do that in a studio because you'd have like a medium or whatever, oil, a vehicle, and then you'd have pigments and you'd grind it and you'd make it, and that would happen in the studio. But then they started making paint in tubes, and then so artists could take them out and paint in the landscape.
Wow. Very cool.
So that is one of the, like, well, you said Van Gogh, right? Not, or is it, or right, who did Sunflowers?
Yeah, Van Gogh.
Yeah, Van Gogh, okay. Yeah, not Picasso, sorry, I know I said that, but yeah, so, yeah, Van Gogh, Picasso and Braque did Cubism. Van Gogh, yeah, he was on that, he was on the later end of, like, the Impressionists and stuff, so, and the Realists.
Well, a little extra one we'll do. The primary visual element in Impressionist paintings is what? Primary visual element, which is also a kind of a broad question, but...
Primary visual, nature? The landscape?
Color.
Light?
Color.
Color.
Yeah, what primary. Kind of a weird answer,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, that's because I was saying, like, you know, Impressionists were all about, like, doing color and make, you know, portraying light as color, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's what it is. I mean, Impressionism was that. It was just kind of finding all the colors and everything in the landscape. Predominantly landscape.
All right. We'll wrap it up with this one. Right. Which is the only piece of artwork that Michelangelo had ever signed?
Only piece of artwork Michelangelo signed. Is it one of the big ones? One that you know?
I'm actually not sure. No, I don't really know the...
Okay.
I don't know this one from the answer.
All right.
That they've given me.
It's not the Sistine Chapel.
No.
It's not like David.
No.
I'm trying to think. Not that. I don't know. I'm not sure. I didn't know that he didn't sign only more than only one.
It starts with the. I can give that to you.
The Assumption.
No.
The Virgin. No. Okay. I don't even know if it did an Assumption, but
it is the Pieta.
Oh, the Pieta.
The Pieta.
Pieta. Pieta is the it's when it's Mary holding Jesus after he was crucified.
Ah.
Pieta is that whenever you see, like, the, you know, Mary holding a full-grown Jesus when he's dead, that's the Pieta. Huh, okay. Michelangelo's Pieta. I can't even picture what that looks like. Which is a shame, because I love Michelangelo. Like, I love his work, and I've always loved... Like, he's one of my favorite kind of artists from that time period, because Michelangelo was a sculptor. Like, that's what he wanted to be. Like, he wore, you know, he was like, you imagine, like, a stone sculptor, like, he's got, like, the tough, like, canvas clothes on, and he's always dirty, and he's got the funky, like, sculptor hat, and, you know, it's like all those things that you think of, like, those kind of niche people who do, like, niche type things when they're really proud that they do those type of things that not a lot of people do. That's what Michelangelo was about sculptor. The sculpture. He was a stone sculptor. That's what he wanted to do.
Oh, no, okay, wait, I'm sorry. It is a stone sculpture.
Oh, okay, yeah, the Pieta.
That's why you can't...
Yeah.
Yeah, that it never said... It just said piece of artwork, I guess.
Right,
got a little mixed up. So it is sculpture.
It's a sculpture of the Pieta. And that's... I kind of assumed it was the Pieta. The one I'm thinking about, like, the best Pieta, I think, is Bernini's Pieta, which is a stone sculpture as well, but it's, like, it's... very it's full of ecstasy. The like the Virgin is like there's some good stuff, but yeah, that's cool. I like it, the Pieta.
Yeah, this one has a lot of robes. She's really covered in it, and he's very skinny. Jesus is laying on her,
right? Yeah,
wonder why he decided to sign that one.
I don't know. That's yeah,
like, what was that one?
Yeah, and I'm surprised that he didn't. P I E I'm looking it up too.
I'm looking at
Michelangelo's Pietà. Yeah, yeah. It's
man, you zoom in on her on her blouse.
Yeah, I know, it's that crazy, isn't it?
It's so really, really,
and all out of marble. It's insane. Just yeah, I mean, like I love Michelangelo, but I mean, to me, bar none, the best stone sculptor is Bernini. If you ever look up any, if anybody wants to see some amazing stuff done with some stone, look up Bernini sculptures. They're just incredible. Like, just incredible. It's crazy. I mean, you're looking at the fabric of her, like, on her chest and what it looks like, how it looks like fabric around skin. But if you look at, like, Bernini's sculptures, basically the same thing. It's ridiculous. It's crazy. Nice. But
all right. All right, nice. That was the art quiz. Well done. You did very well.
All right, thank you. All right, I could tell all my art teachers from art school that I remembered some of the stuff. Some of the stuff they taught me. Some of that old school white guy art. That's great. Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, maybe I'll look up another quiz for Dev this week, because it's kind of fun, you know, going, like, doing some quizzes, but it is cool.
All right, I gotcha.
All right. Let's see. I'm trying to think. I put a couple things. Oh, I wanted to tell a story. So, this week I was working in the shop and I was working on the kiridashi, on the marking knife, from a file. And, I'm kind of grinding away, and I've got all my like PPE on, my, you know, ear protection, eye protection, mask. I'm wearing a leather apron. I actually took a picture of myself and posted on Instagram, being like, modern day armor. You know, it's like the stuff that we put on as protection these days, which is really important. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of like, I'm focused and I'm grinding and I'm like really tight on it. I'm focusing, and out of the corner of my eye, I see this like spark fly. And I'm grinding metal, so sparks flying is not a weird thing. You know, there's like sparks flying down. Sometimes a spark will get caught on the, like, on the grinding belt, and it'll come all the way around and it'll shoot back up to where my face. And I even have a little like blocker thing there to kind of block some of those.
Yeah.
But I see it fly like above me and to the left in a spot that it shouldn't be flying, which is over near the motor. And I see this like, and it's like, I can smell it just a little bit, which is weird too, because I can smell it through my respirator, which I'm wearing. And I kind of stop for a second, and then I like start grinding again. And then I see another spark fly and another like puff of smoke. And I realize that it's like coming from the motor. Mm. And it's not that the motor's catching on fire, but there's like occasional sparks will hit the motor. And something that I don't do that often is clean out my motor to my grinder.
Right.
This is kind of a PSA. Like, if you're in your shop, make sure, especially if you have a motor, like my motor is not really, the motor on my grinder, on my 2x72, is not really designed specifically for that.
It's the Revolution grinder.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Revolution from Brian House. Yeah.
And we specifically discussed about putting some type of grate over that because it's because, so open.
Exactly, yeah. And a lot of people will get grinder motors, electric motors that are self-contained because of the amount of dust that gets inside and the wear and tear that it can do to it. And it can, like, you know, shorten the life of your motor because you're letting like metal dust and stuff get inside. But I'd never really thought about it as like potentially a, you know, a fire hazard as well, because you have all these sparks flying. And I use the 2x72. I use the Revolution for predominantly metal. And I use my 2x42 predominantly for wood. And the reason I do that is because of that, right? I want to keep wood dust on one and metal dust on the other. But, I mean, they're all in my shop, right? There's always, like, wood and metal dust flying around. So like, fortunately, it didn't actually start a fire in my motor, but it, like, it was on the edge. Like, I could tell. Like, I was feeling, like, I was smelling it. I was seeing sparks fly. I think they were, like, starting to spark outside of it. So I actually stopped and I took my compressor and I went over and I like shot air all inside, and like there's just like plumes of dust coming out of the motor and like ooh, you know, so like shooting inside. And then I went over and I cleaned off the 2x42 as well. I got that one cleaned. That one has a more self-contained motor, but yeah, so it was just I was thinking about it because it was something that when you work in a shop and you're working with metal and you're working with wood, the possibility of a fire is really compounded when you're adding those two things together. Mm-hmm. And I was actually listening to the Making It podcast from a couple weeks ago, and Jimmy Dresta was talking about how when he was in a shop with his brother back in the 70s or 80s or something, or I forget when it was exactly, but they had a shop together, and he was grinding something away, and he's the grinding or something. He, like, somehow there was like an ember that got like fell into a trash can or something, and it started this like huge fire, and his brother was up in the mezzanine area of their shop, and like Jimmy like did something real quick, ground, you know, was like went to a grinder that they normally grind wood, and he ground some metal for like a split second and then walked away to go do whatever he's doing, and like, and his brother like yelled down to him, was like, turn around, and he like turned around, there's like a 10-foot flame like bursting out of this like, you know, trash can or whatever. And is so fortunately where they were, it was in the spot where they were able to put it out, you know, they were in like some a place with high ceilings and stuff, but like I could imagine something like that happening in my shop down in the basement. So just be aware that if you have, like, you know, when you're mixing those two things, wood and metal, that you need to be extra careful. And, you know, like I have a bin for my boiled linseed oil rags and stuff, because that can combust. And there, and I have a fire extinguisher down the shop now, which I didn't have for a while. So there are definitely things that could potentially go wrong. So if you have a shop and you're making stuff, just be mindful. You know, I'm not trying to be a safety Sally and tell you to do everything really safe, but just be mindful, because the potential is just compounded on top of each other when you start like mixing all these different mediums together and things that, you know, could possibly ignite and light a fire without even knowing it, right? It could be like hours later. You have a little spark that just sits in some like sawdust, and just a little ember, and that ember just sits there, and then like maybe the wind kicks up and it blows a little bit of wind through your shop and it hits that ember and it like, you know, goes crazy. So
yeah,
it's in my mind. It's often in my mind. I'll come back from like a long weekend away and be like, all right, good, the house is still here. I'm like, I'm still doing things right in the shop.
Maybe we need like at least, if not a, well, maybe a grate or a, you can almost just put some type of a wheel well around the motor, right, just so things aren't falling directly down into it.
Right, exactly. Just, yeah,
which
exactly.
Is a, a big percentage of the dust and dirt is just stuff dropping straight down from the,
right,
from above, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Collecting dust and dirt and stuff. But,
and yeah, I mean, you know, the other thing would be ideally is to have a shop that's not the basement, but, you know, but this basement's so convenient, you know. It's right there. It's so nice.
Maybe down the road.
Intelligent. Yeah.
I'll do one quick before we wrap it up. It was just, I was thinking that when you said that, it was, I'm taking all this stuff down to the dump, trying to clear the sun porch off before we move into the new place.
Yep.
And I got this big old ping pong table that you've played on, but I just have no room for it in the new place. Nobody wanted it, so I had to break it down. And so I was swinging a sledge at it, but I had no protection. And I'm just hitting it with a sledgehammer. I got like flip flops, shorts, and a t-shirt on. I'm just out there, no, nothing. And nice. I think something did fly by me, but it's, you know, it's just, it's metal and bolts and like particle board.
Yeah, right.
Anything like could fly board, straight at you. And scrap metal flying past you. That's one of the things you think about it. And when you think about it, that's your clue to go do it, right?
Yeah.
When you think about maybe I should wear something, when that thought comes across your head, you should do it right away, because there's a reason that's coming to you. But I didn't, and I came out okay. But, you know, there were definitely times when I would see a bolt fly. I was like, oh, boy, that good thing that didn't come my way.
Yeah, exactly.
I did break it down, and Dump did take it, so all is well.
Oh, man. We've had that ping pong table's been around for a while.
Yeah, so now it's in the county dump.
All right, well, it is what it is. It had its time. It brought a lot of pleasure to our family over the years. And now it's an important part of us, hopefully, you know, informing others to be safe with the way that they go about their daily lives as makers and people who do stuff.
That's right. If you think about it, then do it, because the thought has come into your brain.
Yeah, right. It's there for a reason, right? You've heard somewhere else, someone else has given some crazy horror story with like a bolt hitting them in the eyeball, and they, you know, then they have the one eye from their rest of their lives and whatnot. So if you see something, say something.
Right.
All right. So my recommendation this week, I'm going to do is I'm actually going to do three different guys. And because I do want to shout out the two makers who kind of put on the Maker Camp Maker Swap, which I mentioned earlier. So we have Keith, who his Instagram is at Blackthorn Concepts, which is kind of funny because the Maker Camp is at the Blackthorn Resort, but apparently there's no connection between the two. So that's Keith at Blackthorn Concepts, and then also Stu at Yellow Mug Inc. Yellow M-U-G-I-N-K and I-N-C. Yellow Mug Inc. So Keith and Stu are the ones who put it on, who do the challenge out there, and I think it's a great idea. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, I'm on board. That's going to be fun. And then, and my third, so that's, again, that's Blackthorn Concepts on Instagram and also Yellow Mug Inc. And then third is Keen Timber and Tool. So Keen Timber and Tool is a guy named Zach. He does some really awesome axe restoration, and he does some other stuff too. But he has some really beautiful work with like palm swells for axe handles, where he's using like laminated other bits of like kind of exotic woods and things, and then laminating them onto the ends of handles to add that extra thickness to be able to do the palm swells, which is where I saw his work. But he does some really beautiful axe restoration and really beautiful handles and interesting designs, and you know, kind of picking out cool looking materials and woods and stuff to build up those the palm swells on axe handles, which is always something that in my mind is always kind of like an afterthought. You know, it's like, okay, I only have a piece of wood that's this thick, so I have to glue on some wood to be my palm swell. But he does a really good job at making it look purposeful. Like he could have had the wood and he cut it off so that we could do some stuff with laminating some other interesting stuff on to make the end of the handle just as interesting and beautiful as the axe head or the wedge or any of those things. So,
nah.
So check out Keen Timber and Tool on Instagram.
Man, three recommendations.
I know. Yeah, right on. There you go.
Do you remember my last week recommendation? I don't want to double up here. Was it a?
Tell you. Give me 1 second. In my notes from last week, this is a little extra recommendation. This is Love and Death from Woody Allen.
Oh yeah. Okay. So definitely. Okay. Fine. Right. That's right. We're talking about movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to use or recommend I guess it's a tool, a thing I've been using a lot, moving all this stuff. I was looking for certain, I mean, I got come along straps and bungees and rope and stuff, and I was looking for something online to cover everything right in the back, yep, of my truck. Mm-hmm. And then I stumbled on it. It's such a simple thing, and probably a lot of people have it. It's just a bungee net.
Yep.
And that's it, because I've been using it the last week. It's been awesome, because it's like whatever, for me, it's worked perfect, especially dump runs and stuff, right? You can throw a couple straps down on something, but if you have, like I've had scrap metal and recycling, yeah, and like a TV and some other stuff and like foam and stuff, mm-hmm, all in the same load, because you're trying to clear stuff out. And instead of like strapping everything down, I just threw the bungee net over, clipped it in. It's got a bunch of carabiners, came with it.
Nice.
It's like an Amazon thing. It came with like 15 carabiners.
Yeah.
So you clip nice. It down to everything, and it was ready to go. And it's everything super secure.
That's awesome.
And it was awesome. Just it's really nice. And I was
thinking that same thing for Dad's truck. So we were helping out on Saturday. My dad had his truck, the back of the truck, completely full of, you know, just trash and junk and stuff to go to the, mm-hmm, dump. And was that was my thought. Like, oh, he needs one of those bungee nets to just throw over everything. Right. Because, again, it's just like a bunch of stuff. Like, it would probably all stay in the truck, but it might blow out. You know, like,
right.
Just enough that you're like, what do I do? And, yeah, you can zigzag a bunch of lines back and forth across. But to having a bungee net that you can throw over and bungee down, and you kind of create, you know, just enough hold on it to kind of secure it to make you feel better about, you know, driving down the road with a bunch of shit in the back of your truck going to the dump.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You're not necessarily going to want to throw it over like a piece of valuable furniture, you know, to really strap it down. You're going to have to crank something down with that. But
right.
When you got a bunch of random stuff, I don't know if there's anything better, because the net is like, I'd say like 6x6 squares. So right. anything bigger than that will not fly out.
Right, exactly.
And yeah. I've taken many loads this week, and everything's been tight and in there, and whatever I chuck in the back of my truck, I just throw it on, click it in.
Nice. And you just got that from Amazon?
Yeah. Cool. So, I mean, you don't really have to put a link. Just look up bungee net on Amazon. There's a bunch.
Yeah.
Pick the best rated one that's a decent price. I think mine was like $24.
Yeah, right. And the other thing about that, too, is that, you know, once you take it off and you put it, it crumbles down to like what, like, you know, 6x6 or something. You put it in a bag and like,
yeah,
you
know, yeah, it's
like,
got
you put it in like a gallon Ziploc bag and toss it in the back of your truck or something.
Oh yeah, it's got, yeah, a tiny, it's
like no,
it's,
floor, yeah,
nice. Yeah, this one came with the bag and the carabiners, and I might just end up laying it in my truck.
Right. Yeah.
It's like clipped down to the front and the back
right,
yeah, clips on the bottom of the bed.
Yep.
And it might just lay there. Yeah, right. Exactly. I'll just throw it, clip it in, and
we should do that. We should do a like a truck toolbox. You know what you should have in your truck, because I've been kind of refining that list over the last couple of years since I've had trucks. You know what things do I make sure I always have in my truck that are possibly needed, and you know. The nice thing is that like everyone's list is going to be a little bit different, but mostly the same. I think if someone has a truck, so.
Or
maybe we'll do that if some
we do that or we do a comparison.
Okay.
Like we pull two trucks up and we have similar stuff. Like we put it all next to the trucks and then we load it up and then we try to secure it all. And see what's best for what.
Yeah, but I'm thinking just like what you would have in your truck just to go out and about. Like what things do you think are important to keep as a truck person, you know? Like,
oh yeah, right.
What
right.
do you keep? You know, like what does your toolbox look like in your truck? You know, what things should always be there? And like as a truck person, you know, you have this idea that your truck can do things that other vehicles can't, right? So you're always prepared with something because you know that there might be an instance that you might have to do something that a truck can do that a car can't do. So what do you add into your into your to-go bag or toolbox that should always be with you in a truck? I know Wrangler Store has done this a couple times with his trucks, but some of that may have been influenced over the years for what I put in my truck. But yeah, you know, there are some things that I always like to keep in my truck just in case.
That'd be cool.
Yeah, right on.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. All right, well, this is a late one for us, but you know, it is what it is. We're here to entertain and chat, and I think we always have enough stuff to talk about. We're at an hour and a half, like normal. So thank you guys so much for listening. It's been truly a pleasure all these weeks that we've been doing this. It's really fun, and it's great to know you're out there listening. You know, you can always go support us. And for those of you who do support us over on Patreon, we just want to say thank you so much, because it really makes a big difference. And it's just super generous that people are out there that want to support us. So thank you so much. Thank you to those people that we have recommended. It's awesome to see other people out there doing stuff. And make sure you don't forget to go over to YouTube and follow us there. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, The Art of Craftsmanship, and follow us both on Instagram. See what's happening.
Yeah. And we will I'll be moving, so this is the last broadcast from this area apartment on my side, because if you guys don't know, Dustin and I don't always broadcast. Most of the time we don't podcast together. We're separate. So this will be the last one from here, and then next week I'll be talking to you from the new house, and then I guess after that we'll be coming back from Maker Camp.
Yeah, so we'll be reporting back on what happened at Maker Camp.
Yeah.
Super exciting. Super fun. I'm really excited. And hopefully see a bunch of you there. If we do, and you listen to the podcast, let us know that you listen, because it's super fun to hear that.
We will give you a sticker.
Yes, we will. We got stickers. Yes, they're coming. They should be here on the 6th. So I think it'll be on Tuesday, and then we'll be taking them up. So if you know the podcast, then you'll know the stickers. You'll know what the theme is. So, all right, everybody. Thank you all so much for listening. Hopefully we see you up at Maker Camp, and if not, that's awesome too. And we will talk to you all next time.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.